Have you here, and also here with Grant Rubin, Downstate Grant.
Hey, Doug, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Tonight we're going to be revisiting the 2012 topic with our guest, John Ventry. And, of course, if you have questions and you're in the chat room, we'd love to hear them. If you want to call in, the number's here on your screen. We can take those calls as well. Some interesting stuff in the news recently. Steve Culls has released a picture, presumably, of a Bigfoot. So we'll be trying to get him on the show here in the next month or so and discuss that a little bit more. Not sure what to make of it. If you're a Paranexus member, you can log into the Paranexus forum and take a look at it if you'd like.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's there on one of the posts. Just posted
I'll
the
go
stuff.
Take a peek. And I know that it was supposed to be out this weekend, so is it a photo that was released?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool.
And Steve was very, very willing to let me have it for peer review, the original, so...
Oh, great. Well, good.
So there's different theories out there.
Good.
So tonight, we're going to be talking with John Ventry. He's the state director for Pennsylvania for MUFON. He's also the author of the book 12-21-2012, A Prophecy. And so we'll be discussing some of the different 2012 prophecies, cultural prophecies, and so forth, and hopefully come away with a little better understanding. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hey, it's a pleasure to have you here.
So, John, you've been with MUFON for about 14 years, you say, and the state director for the last four, and that's for Pennsylvania, correct?
Yeah. I also have actually Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Delaware as state director.
Oh, wow. So you're a triple stater.
Yeah, actually, I was the first one. That was the first one that they gave multiple states to, so it's worked out pretty good. We've got some good members, about 140 members between the three states, 150 members.
Cool. So let's start with the 2012. What got you interested in 2012?
You know, I always heard about this Mayan calendar and this 2012, and it was actually in 1996. I was working and I was traveling around the country. I didn't have anything to do at night, so I just started researching it and writing my own ideas, and I don't know what got me into it. It's just all of a sudden I had this urge to write. I remember I was down in Florida, and I went to the front desk and got a pad of paper and a pen, and I just started to write ideas and then get online and start researching it. And then it was about 10 years later that I put out the book 12-21-2012, A Prophecy, and I just put out a second book called Day After 2012. And it's kind of funny how that came out. I go around speaking at conferences on 2012, and at two of the conferences, they said, oh, what are you going to say when nothing happens in 2012? And jokingly, I said, I'm working on my next book right now called The Day After 2012. Then I started thinking about it. I said, you know, that's a pretty good title.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It reminds me of The Day After Roswell, you know, that book. Mm-hmm. So I actually got, you know, working on it, and I just put that out. It's a quick read. It's only 100 pages, but it's a good storyline.
That's good. So you've done some research on some of the different 2012 or end times prophecies from different cultures along the way. What What's perhaps starting chronologically or however you would like to present it on some of these prophecies?
Well, you know, they run the whole gamut, and I think I have 19 different prophecies that I came up with, and apparently there's even more, because if you watch the History Channel shows, you know, I didn't go into, like, China with I Ching and all of that, but they all got prophecies. But, you know, that's the interesting thing, is these cultures were not supposed to be in contact with each other, you know, going back 1,500, 2,000 years, but yet they all seem to have this 2012 story, similar to, like, all the cultures having a great flood story, and we know that that was real, that there was a great flood. So I find that real interesting that, you know, the Hopi Indians didn't talk to the Mayans, but yet they both specifically mentioned 2012 as some sort of an earth change. But, I mean, there's all kinds of interesting prophecies.
Is it possible that the Hopi and the Mayan traded? I mean, well, I would think, and I'm not trying to throw, I mean, I'm not, you know, disrespecting that. I'm just kind of, it just seems to me, we kind of talked about this with somebody about a week or so ago, and I think that a lot of times we underestimate how vast their little trade network might have been. It just makes me wonder.
Yeah, well, you know, when you talk about the Hopis and Mayans, I think that's a good chance. But, for example, you know, they'll say that, you know, we didn't have contact with Asia, for example. You know, although
right.
there's some evidence Chinese were here, just like there's evidence that the Vikings were in the New England area,
mm-hmm.
too. But,
mm-hmm.
but we'll credit, you know, we'll credit Columbus.
We know it was Christopher Columbus, right, John?
Oh, yeah. Only because he's Italian. But, you know,
we know the
even,
truth.
Yeah, but that's even a joke because he didn't land in the United States, let's say.
Yeah.
He was down in the Caribbean somewhere.
You mean they
you know?
Lied to us?
Along
oh
with just
goodness.
About everything else. but there's all different types of prophecies, and I'll just start and throw a few of them out there. I guess we should probably start with the Mayans, and everybody's you know heard about them. But the interesting thing is, they started with the date of 12/21/2012 and counted backwards because they wanted to be perfectly accurate, and that's the way it ended up, is perfectly accurate. And, you know, a couple of things that they said was that there's this dark rift in the center of the sky. And then in 1993, we found there's actually a black hole in the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And they talked about us being in the center of the sky, and we found out that when the sun rises on the morning of 12/21/2012, we're actually in the center of the view of the sun rising is in the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and that happens every 25,800 years. And one of their calendars is on a 25,800 year cycle. So how do you explain that? I mean, how do you explain that they created these three calendars? One of them is perfect as far as how long it takes us to make one rotation, you know, around where we see the entire view of the solar system. It takes 25,800 years.
Yeah.
And that has to do with the wobble of the Earth because it changes 1 degree every 72 years. And that's why the sky that the Egyptians see is different than the sky we see, you know, now. But how did they know that back then?
That's a good question.
It makes you wonder because also the Egyptians, too, seem to have an incredible working knowledge of astronomy. And, you know, some of the observations, some people have speculated that you know, they made those observations like 10,000 years ago based on the way that the positions of the constellations were at the time and how they depicted them, which that really, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, and, you know, this, one of the other things, too, is, and I was, you know, growing up and going to school, and you probably had to train the same way to think that we're evolving. You know, that the people in the Roman times and Egyptian times weren't as smart as we are, that we're constantly getting smarter. But that's not true. humans have been humans for quite a long time. And if you could transport somebody from Egypt or Rome to the 21st century, they would be just like us. Maybe not as tall because of nutrition, but their brains and their intelligence level is the same as ours. And, we think that we're these cave people that have just continued to progress, and that's not true. And I really don't buy into the whole evolution thing. I don't, a lot of it doesn't make any sense, you know?
So,
the Mayans also had a story of extraterrestrials coming back, and that's in their sacred text of the Popol Vuh, it's called. And they talk similar to like Sitchin about us being created as a dumb and like dumbing down the species, mm-hmm. and very similar to what you find in ancient Sumeria. So that's what the Mayans. And one thing I want to say with the Mayans, they never said anything about any sort of destruction. They said it would be just the start of a new cycle. And they talk about these cycles that last, 25,800 years. So they didn't predict any destruction. So all the movies, everything that says the Mayans, all they said is it starts a new cycle.
Right. And then it's kind of taken on its own life from there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But
well,
there are all the cultures, yeah.
People love, scenes where there's going to be Armageddon.
Yeah.
It's like going to a movie, a scary movie, Ooh, it's kind of spooky and it's scary. I mean, the one that I thought, the only comparison I could make was, remember when 2000 came around? All the computers were going to crash and all this other kind of stuff. And 2000 came and went and nothing happened,
Yeah. Well, that's, one of the things I say in my books, too, is it another Y2K? Or is this one real? But there are other cultures that it's interesting. The Mayans were the first one, but they didn't talk about any destruction. They said it was a cyclical, it's almost like an evolutionary type thing with us. But then other cultures picked up on it, and this is going back 500 years, 1,000 years, and they talk about destruction like the Hopi Indians.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny what happened in Japan last month made me think of the Hopi prophecies. They say the earth will be shaken and there'll be like explosion. It'll affect North and South America. They talk about cleansings that have taken place either from asteroid strike, the Ice Age, and the Great Flood. That's three cleansings that took place. Then they go into talking about very similar to Ezekiel, that these extraterrestrials will come back, and they do these Kachina dances that kind of look like they're wearing spacesuits and helmets. But actually, the one I meant to mention was Edgar Cayce. What happened in Japan reminded me of Edgar Cayce, because he specifically said for 2012 that he saw the destruction of Japan and the west coast of the United States, that they will dip into the Pacific Ocean. And what happened with the tsunami reminded me of, what Edgar Cayce said. But he also said in 2012 he saw a reversal of the poles and a reversal of hot and cold climates, which could be a pole shift that was mentioned by a number of people. And he also predicted, and it's interesting, prior to us knowing about solar flares, he predicted that there would be strong solar bursts in 2012. And scientifically right now, it is predicted for 2012 to have the strongest solar flares and solar bursts that take place.
Well,
how did he know that?
I wonder when you talk about, the galactic plane and how we're in line with the galactic plane, and how that's interesting and how the cycle there. And how would they possibly have known unless they could have figured it out by the way the constellations were moving, and they could probably project out, because they were pretty darn good astronomers and mathematicians after all. And I mean, I think that math comes somewhat naturally to humans. I think that that we have that ability, but nonetheless, I remember as a kid one time that we were told the world was going to end by all these Indian prophets because all the planets would align. You might even remember it, John. All the planets were going to be in alignment. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a kid in school waiting for the end to come and thinking, I'd rather be other places for this to happen.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it passed, but,
Well, we know scientifically it doesn't matter if all the planets are in alignment or we're in the center plane on that day, because it's so far apart that you can't have any gravitational pull. But the question is, how do they know 1,500 years ago that on a 25,800-year cycle, you go one rotation around the whole the view of the entire sky?
Mm-hmm.
How could they possibly? And even, you know, we used to say, well, maybe they were observing the sky. It changes 1 degree every 72 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd have to go like a whole lifetime to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And will you even notice 1 degree? So in 10 lifetimes of 720 years, it changed 10 degrees. You might notice that. How could they possibly know that? And the other thing, just like the Egyptians, they were Stone Age people, and then all of a sudden they're building expansion bridges, is the Mayans, they're building expansion bridges, they come up with astronomy, a perfect calendar, they're starting to do brain surgery. How is it possible that they did all of this? Say, exactly like the Egyptians, you know, around the same time frame, they all of a sudden get this knowledge. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it certainly makes you wonder, and I know Doug and I have kicked this around, and I'm sure you have too, John, is the fact that what those people had, was that the small grains of some sort of hidden knowledge that, you know, or hidden, you know, technology that you know, was lost?
Mm.
And, you know, it always makes me wonder, I mean, what type of information was in the library at Alexandria, you know, before?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it was probably, I mean, who knows? Who knows? But it seems to me that at least the knowledge of mathematics was kind of in there in the Mediterranean somehow. I don't know how it got there, I'm not going to say. But I mean, of celestial mechanics somehow, and
yes.
I think that was kind of shared with other cultures, you know, and maybe that had to do with seafaring. But you know, I think that maybe somebody gave that to us as a gift. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, they actually say they got this knowledge, and they say it came from a person by the name of Kokulkan, who was a Caucasian male with blonde hair, and they said he rose from the sea. He came walking out of the ocean onto their, you know, area there, and he had an elongated skull, which was why they started putting those boards on their heads and creating the elongated skull, and he gave them all of this technology and this knowledge. And they actually said that he would be back on March 5th of 1519. And who do you think showed up on March 5th of 1519?
Cortez,
and he brought disease, everything else, and wiped out a lot of
destruction. The empire.
That's right. Well, more, it was the Aztecs, but it was in the Mayan records that they said that, and that's why they accepted Cortez, thinking he was the return of Kokulkan, who gave them all of that knowledge. But you know, even beyond that, there's a lot of other prophecies, and some of these just come together, for example, in other reading that I've done, and it had nothing to do with 2012. For example, I don't know if you ever heard of Father Malachi.
Oh, yeah.
Malachi
Martin, isn't that what it was?
I think it's more Gare or Martin, yeah. And he wrote the papal prophecy. But,
right.
You know, I'm reading this thing about the papal prophecy, and he predicted every pope from 1124 to the present, and the last pope. Yeah. The last pope will be Peter, because the first pope was Peter.
Who will bring down the end of the church.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting.
Malachi, yes, yeah.
Yeah, the thing that's interesting, he says there'll be 266 popes. Now, he doesn't say anything about 2012, but he says the naming of the 266th pope will be the start of end of days and revelations. And, well, right now, Benedict is Pope 265,
mm-hmm.
and he's 84 years old. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just a coincidence. You know, you're right there a year and a half from 2012. You got an 84-year-old pope. And if he were to pass away, you'd fall right on Father Malachi's prediction of the 266 pope starting end of days. I mean, that's
a
coincidence.
Some of them are still like Nostradamus. Some of them are still open to interpretation. I mean, I've taken a look and read some of them. And although I think it's fascinating, you know, I mean, because the last pope is supposed to be like the end of the Catholic Church. That's supposed to be I can't remember, it's like Peter, you said.
Yeah, Peter.
Some of the things that they said about Pope John seemed to be pretty accurate, too, in the prophecy. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Even the prophecies about Pope John, the one that was poisoned, he was only a pope for a couple of, for a month, maybe.
Right.
I mean,
right.
that was all predicted also. And, you know, they say he dug into the records and some of the finances there. Somebody knocked him off. But
yeah,
that was
predicted.
He was
in the Godfather Part 3, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff was predicted. But you know what's interesting also about this whole 2012 thing is you probably heard about these seed banks that are being built, this 1,400
uh-huh.
seed banks and the Global Crop Diversity Trust. I mean, they're building these things 300 feet above sea level. Now, if all the water, if all the ice melted, both North and South Pole, the water levels would go up 200 feet. So they're building these seed banks 300 feet above sea level, and we're storing, you know, seeds. And then you got this frozen ark project that's in Nottingham, England, where they're collecting DNA samples of every species, and, you know, like a Noah's Ark, just in case something were to happen. And they say it's because of a possible nuclear war, asteroid strike, that type of deal. So, I mean, countries are actually, you know, planning right now.
Yeah, I think that that's become a lot, you know, who knows, they may have knowledge that we don't. But nonetheless, yeah, I think those doomsday things, I kind of wondered, who the hell's going to be around to plant those seeds?
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, they're going to be in this vault that could last for 1,000 or 1,000,000 years, and nobody's going to be around to plant them.
Yeah, well, then you got to hope there is an acid rain and it's also plantable,
yeah.
you know. But, you know, what's interesting, if you saw the movie 2012, and, you know, and I wrote this stuff, and it's not my, you know, I found it that somebody else kind of predicted, you know, all of these 19 prophecies. But I'm watching the movie, and at the end, they do the same Noah's Ark thing, where they're bringing two
right.
of every animal on. And I said to myself, as I'm sitting in the theater, wouldn't it have been cool if they didn't do that, and all they had was test tubes, like somebody
yeah.
says, where are the animals? And, oh, we have DNA samples. You know, Noah's Ark, you know, we got DNA samples.
Yeah.
We're not bringing – I mean, that would have been more modern way of doing the movie. And I think that would have had a nice impact.
But not as dramatic or not as – for some of the goobers out there, they couldn't get
mm-hmm.
it. So it had to be –
yeah.
You know, it had to be
yeah.
really – they had to paint a picture for them with a broad
yeah, right.
brush.
And then people would question whether cloning would actually work, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's all interesting. But, you know, we are, like I said, we're at least planning for a possible type of destruction that could take place for a number of
catastrophe,
different
you know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and that, you know, that's just prudent. I mean, as our technology grows, we have the wherewithal to do this sort of thing. It just makes sense to do it to protect the different species on the planet and so forth. So what other prophecies coincide with this that you've studied?
Yeah, well, there's other prophecies about that talk about the reversal of our magnetic poles. I mean, and this stuff is just uncanny. Everything I talk about is pretty much coincidental, maybe, but they're talking about things that are actually scientifically coming to bear fruit in the past couple of years. And prophecies were made a long time ago saying that our magnetic poles would reverse. We know that that has happened, you know, it has happened. Geologists will tell you, and they can tell from the strata of rocks, that the poles have reversed. And right now, I mean, you can go look it up, our magnetic poles are weakening right now. And one of the effects could be if you have those solar bursts, which shoot out a lot of radiation, they could fry our satellites. I mean, that is something that's, again, going to peak in 2012. How do people know this when they make these predictions, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago? And as a matter of fact, in 1859, there was a solar flare.
Major solar flare.
And we were using telegraph systems at the time, and it fried all the telegraph systems around the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something predicted for 2012 also, which, you know, it,
well, you
it,
know,
it can
solar
happen.
Activity, if we have those big spikes, I mean, it could just wipe out all the Internet. It could just completely destroy it.
Yeah. And, you know, when you absolutely. When you look at this, you know, they'd say it could cost like trillions of dollars worth of damage. I mean, you could fry the power grids. You'd lose all your satellites, your communications. And you know, it makes me think of that book, if you ever read it, Lucifer's Hammer.
Yeah,
you know, we were hit by the comet. But I remember, you know, there was a paragraph in it that said pretty much that it only takes about 3 weeks to revert back to feudal times. I mean, just think about it. You have no water, you have no electricity, you got to start planting crops, you got to go back to the, you know, feudal type times. And, you know, that's what it makes me think about, you know, that if something like this happened, you know, we're in deep trouble.
Yeah, well, the magnitude of the disaster is going to make whoever the survivors, I can't imagine how they're going to make their way through it, you know, unless, you know, they're like the people that inhabit the shelters.
Yeah.
That's got to be the plan. And then it's not going to be clean for probably another 100 years, you know, once they come out, depending on what happens, even if it's, even if they survive, if it's an asteroid with all the earth upheavals and everything else to be.
Yeah, but you know, there's also something to that I would mention about that too. You know, I mean, we talk about that if there was a disaster, and you know, people reverting perhaps back to a barbaric type nature, and you know, some people obviously will do that or would do that. You know, but I don't think everybody will. I think that decent people won't. I think they will still maintain their, you know, their enlightenment, their evolution. You know, I mean, if you got a neighbor and they're starving, I'm going to share. I'm not going to, you know, fight for my little spot. Of course, that's me. I may be different, but you know, I don't think everybody's going to go to that.
Yeah, and you know, I've thought about that same scenario. You know, my neighbors, you know, this county here in Westmoreland County I live is the most heavily armed county in Pennsylvania, right? And, you know, you say, okay, everybody's home, stuff like that. Now, think about what you said. Yeah, you know, I mean, I've got my hot tub that's full of water, and I actually got a filter system that I can drink that water and stuff. Now, think about this scenario, right? You're working at your little community, at your street. All of a sudden, you got 180 armed guys coming, paramilitary, whatever, and all they do is come down the street, they're heavily armed, 50 caliber weapons, go house to house.
Take exactly what they want. Yep.
That's it. You know that's going to happen.
You don't raise a 45 to those cats.
No.
Because they're coming in, and you know, it's good. If it got to be the worst case scenario, it's going to be like the Wild West out there.
Yeah.
And you know, it'll be survival of the fittest, and there'll be people that'll just be brutal, and they won't give a damn one way or another.
Yeah. You'll have to find a way to protect your neighborhood. You know,
And even then, it'll be just like so tribal that, you know what, it'd be like, you know, imagine what it must have been like to be like a little tribe on the edge of Europe when Genghis Khan came through.
Yeah.
You know, everybody in the village is killed.
Think about the Roman Empire, right?
Yeah.
You know, it was supposed to last 1,000 years. It lasted about 500 years, but it collapsed in 276. Well, when it collapsed, we went into 1,000 years of the Dark Ages, and it wasn't until the Renaissance period that we started to come out of that, because there was no government, no organization. And you know, I got news for you: like, if it goes a couple or you know, it goes 100 years, your grandkids will not be able to read and write and be like you know your kids are right now, because you just won't have the time to pass that on to them, because you got to go out and plant
surviving.
Food.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, it would take
150 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
And it'll be feudal. You know, there'll be feudal lords, and, you know, they'll have the power. And whatever the system is for, you know, wielding power, you know, whether it's money or whether it's a gun at the end of a barrel of a gun, they'll have it.
Yeah. And you know what it reminds me of, too? And I don't know if you're that familiar with super volcanoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happens if... what's his name? Yellowstone goes up.
Yeah. I mean, that's one.
Goes up and it's getting more active. I mean, that's a real disaster to be had there. It covered like almost all of North America in a lava, what, like 3 or 4 feet deep one time?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you know, the funny thing is, I saw this on the Discovery Channel probably 10 years ago. They talked about Yellowstone, and they said the way they found out that there was a super volcano there was a bunch of guys went like every 5 years, bunch of doctors, lawyers, they had a lot of money. They show up at their favorite spot there at Yellowstone, and the lake moved. The dock was there, but there was no water. The lake was over to the right, and the trees were under like 3 feet of water. They said, how is this possible? So they actually paid and got all of the surveys and resurveyed that area and compared it, and they found out that the ground had swelled up 6 feet, and it just moved the lake over to the side.
Hmm.
And that's when they found out that Yellowstone's an active volcano. And what's crazy, you think about Mount St. Helens, you know, that blast up on the mountain there was maybe, what, a mile by a mile at best that blew up? Well, Yellowstone is 60 miles by 40 miles. I mean, it's like the size of Puerto Rico or half the size of Long Island that would blow, and it shoots straight up into the upper atmosphere, into the stratosphere, actually. And that's the one that scares me, because it blows, and we know it blows every 600,000 years. Well, it's been 640,000 years. They had 21 tremors there last January. We know the ground's swelling up. And, you know, when it goes, it's going to drop 8 feet of ash over the entire breadbasket of the United States. And I've seen some different scenarios where, like where I am near Pittsburgh, that you will get a dusting of ash or we'll get 3 inches of ash. But pretty much it won't hit the coastal areas. But the whole breadbasket of the United States will be under 6-8 feet of ash, you know, and then it gets less and less as it goes further out. But the problem is it'll darken the sky, and then the ash causes acid rain, which kills the plankton in the ocean, which makes it you can't plant anything outside. And that's where, you know, you get into this, like, you know, end-of-the-world type scenario that, you know, you're going to lose three-quarters of the world's population. All of the third-world countries, they'll never survive, because we still feed 100 countries, and we won't be able to feed ourselves.
Uh-huh. And the other nations, you know, they're not going to be able to step up and meet the demand if they're not even damaged themselves, like Canada or some of those, because that's going to be in the danger zone as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, look, I mean, I think that we forget all about that, and I think it's important that you bring that up, is that, you know, we're oblivious to natural disasters. I mean, I was watching a show about Pompeii the other day, and I mean, the thing was on National Geographic, and you know, one of the things that they found, they just recently had this finding, where people were in Pompeii after the thing had gone up, you know, still trying to sell and still trying to do things to protect their property until all hell broke loose, you know, until it was way too late. But they had sat through one rumble, two rumbles, three rumbles, you know, and they found change still on the counter were vendors. Where, you know, where they didn't even have time to grab their change from their customer sales.
Yeah. You know, I think in my book somewhere, I talked about the frequency of earthquakes. You know, if you go back to the 1960s, and I don't remember off the top of my head how, you know, there was an earthquake every so many years and the severity was low and all of that. And you just look at, like, the last 2 years. This decade, let's say, you've had three biblical tsunamis and earthquakes, right?
That's the nature. That's the nature of the planet. You know, the planet is a living entity in itself. Where, you know, on those tectonic plates where Japan sits and California sits, that's all part of the Earth expanding and moving. And I mean, that's a natural phenomena, and that's something that we just, unfortunately, just got to go, okay, because there's not a dang thing we can do about it.
But you know what I think about? Yeah, you know what I think about is that maybe somebody knows the frequency, the cycle of this stuff, just like the Mayans on this 25,800-year cycle. What if, and I've always had this thought, it's even the beginning of my book, talks about what if we're not the most advanced civilization ever on this planet? You know, you talk about Atlantis, Lemuria. What if every 25,800 years there's some sort of cataclysm that pretty much almost wipes out 90% of humans and just throws the planet into an ice age? And you know, so you think you're getting there, and then all of a sudden, boom, whatever it is, you know? And we just keep going through this cycle every 26,000 years where, you know, maybe...
Like Sisyphus, you know, just rolling that rock up the hill.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they have it roll right back down on top of us.
Yeah, maybe that's the cycle, 25,800 years. And
yeah, well, you know, it's interesting that, you know, things do happen in cycles, even in geological time, or, you know, it does happen, you know. And so, yeah, all things are possible. I mean, but our lifetimes in comparison are just like so unimportant, so insignificant. But, yeah, you know, it does make you wonder. And I have no doubt in my mind that somebody, you know, anybody who has the technology for interstellar travel certainly would have had that kind of geology licked a long time before they went to the stars.
Yeah, they could have also been observing us. You know?
Oh, of course. Of course, they would have been. I mean, even now, I think most people, and I know both you guys will agree, most people, I think, underestimate how far advanced another species might be. Yeah. I mean, when we think of 1,000 years, what if it's 1,000,000 years?
Yeah. Well,
what
you
if
know,
it's 1,000,000 years? I mean, we wouldn't. I mean, talk about magic.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, you know this too, John, as a UFO, guy who's familiar with it. There's been talk for years about things just like dematerializing through walls.
Yeah.
It's just like, whoa, what's that about?
Okay. Well, you know what I find interesting is one of the things I present UFO-wise is the Air Force used to teach a class at Colorado Springs. It was a physics 370 class. They taught it 1968, 69, and 70. They pulled it after Project Blue Book said UFOs were not a threat to our defense, to our planet, you know. But in it, and I've got a copy, you can Google it, you know. We taught this class to our Air Force cadets at Colorado Springs. It's chapter 33 of the physics class, and it says UFOs and the threat. And the opening paragraph says that there are three or four species of extraterrestrials, and they've been here for as long as 50,000 years.
Wow. And what's the name of this book that people can Google?
Yeah, what you got to do is just Google Air Force Academy and UFOs, Air Force Cadet Training, UFOs. It took me a couple of tries until I actually found it, and you'll find it, and it's chapter 33 of the physics 370 class at the Air Force Academy that they used to teach. And it's some of the best reading you'll ever want to see on UFOs, along with the Fire Officer's Guide for Disaster Control.
Oh,
chapter
yeah.
Chapter 13.
Yeah. What to do if one crashes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, what to do, and it tells you about all these cases. But that was, you know, 1968, 69, 1970, 40 years ago, that's what we were teaching our cadets, because we knew that this UFO stuff was real, but talks about them being here up to 50,000 years. So if they were here, you know, when we were here.
Well, we're their petri dish then, if that's the case. We have been for a long time. And I think that what people would not, and maybe one of the reasons why there's no disclosure is, if these entities, whatever they are, if they're non-human, that's really going to flip people out. I don't care what they say about, especially if they've had some hand in, you know, the manipulation of human genetics for whatever purpose. We can't even begin to try to say, well, that's an unethical experiment, because how could you, you know the alien mind and vice versa?
Yeah. I mean, if they don't believe that there's a God, let's say, because we, you know, we have this moral character to us. Let's say they don't. Let's say they're insects. They're praying mantis.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And they see us just as a big genetic lab here. They know every 25,000, 26,000 years there's a cyclical cataclysm that takes place here. And all they do is when we get wiped out, you know, last time, well, let's see, the first time they put dinosaurs, and then they got wiped out, so they put these woolly mammoths and saber-tooths and cavemen, and it got wiped out, you know, and now they created these humans. What if that's the truth? You know, it's just a big genetic lab, and we're an experiment.
Yeah, well, what if, like you say, even take it a step further, what if it's this gorgeous little planet that every 28,500 years has a major calamity, like you said, knocks it off its axis, it becomes for a while, or knocks it spinning, it takes it 10,000 years to come back from an ice age and for civilization. So it's this constant Petri dish for those observers to see without interfering, you know, just the natural cycle of the planet, how civilization can evolve or even survive, whether it's, you know, dinosaurs or humans, because we're only one part of it.
Yeah. And you know what, when you think about it, the Ice Age was 26,000 years ago. That's on that same Mayan calendar of 26,000. And I'll tell you something else. The last supervolcano that blew was in Indonesia. It blew 72,000 years ago. So that's almost three cycles ago. And we know that it killed 90% of humans when it blew. We know that from the mitochondrial DNA. Mm-hmm. And we lost 90% of the gene pool. We were probably, as a planet,
almost,
down to a couple of thousand people. That was it. You know,
human beings were almost extinct.
Yeah. And that's almost on that same cycle. That would have been three cycles ago, according to the Mayans. Pretty close, you know, mm-hmm. within a couple of thousand years. So, you know, I mean, the stuff, it's all, you know, it's
well, what happens if the universe has a hiccup?
Yeah, you know? I mean, anything could happen. You know, I used to not believe this pole shift thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you look at these tsunamis and you know, the earthquake, and it moved the planet, what, 12 feet? It changed our rotation or whatever?
Yeah.
I mean, what if we had, I mean, they talk about global earthquakes. You know, what would happen if that supervolcano blew? You think about, you know, a 9.0 earthquake. If the supervolcano blew, it's a 900.0, you know, explosion. What could
do? You know, I think one of the neat things on your website, it's a beautiful website, by the way, is I like the photograph you have or the picture you have of North America. And if my memory serves me correct, that almost looks like something from the Triassic, or isn't it the Sea of Tethys there at the top? Is that what you're trying to do, like similar Earth changes?
Yeah, well, what I did for the cover of my book is I took a map that showed all of the rivers, and I knew that if all the ice melted, it would raise the sea level 200 feet. But in my storyline, it's only the North Pole, so it's 40 feet. So what I did was I swelled all of the rivers. The Great Lakes merged together. The coastal areas are gone. Florida is gone. But I swelled every river in the country is how I did the cover of the book. And I looked, you know, and it was based on a 40-foot rise in sea level. And that's what you ended up with, you know. But, it's interesting. It merged into the Great Lake instead of the Great Lakes. And I gave myself waterfront property here in Pittsburgh.
Well, that's bad news for us because we're both in Florida. But you know, it's really interesting because if you look at how the continents have changed and everything else, and it's all part of that geology and the shifting of the tectonic plates. And I mean, the climates that there were huge continents that have all broken apart at one point in time. But I really like that however that was conjured up, because I always thought, you know, can you imagine, I was an active scuba diver, Doug used to do it too, and I always thought, wouldn't it be great to have a time machine so you could go back there and dive in those seas, because I'm sure that'd be a real adventure. Of course, you'd have to be real careful that you don't get gulped down by one of those huge, gigantic, you know, predator lizards out there in the water.
Yeah,
but still, it must have been gorgeous then.
Yeah, well, and, you know, and this other, I there's a guy named Gordon Scallion, I think his name is, and he showed a map of the U.S., but in his map, he's got the whole Colorado Plateau sinking, and then it becomes an ocean in the middle of the United States. And I didn't buy into that would happen, that the whole, you know, Colorado Plateau would drop, you know, and the Rocky Mountains and everything, but you know, that was just my version of it based on you know, sea levels rising 40 feet. But it's interesting stuff.
Hey, John, there's a question in the Inception Radio Network chat room, and we welcome all those listeners as well. And the question is, does John know anything about the Denver International Airport having a major survival bunker underneath it?
You know, I've heard that, and I actually wanted to talk a little bit about these deep underground military bases. In my storyline, I do talk about that with the supervolcanoes, because besides the 1,400 seed banks and the genetic bank, people for years have talked about this vibrating that they feel. Remember 10, 20 years ago was the Taos hum, T-A-O-S in New Mexico,
right.
Taos hum, that people felt as vibration that was bothering them. Well, people have felt that all around the country in different areas. And what is said is that we have 129 deep underground military bases, and that's an acronym for DUMB, D-U-M-B, deep underground military base. But it's not dumb, it's really smart. And you talk about, you know, if we knew something was going to happen, we'd have to get to Mars or we'd have to get to the moon to survive. And that's not true, because just think about it. A tornado comes past, right? And what do they do? In Kansas, they go into a shelter. They're just 5 feet underground, and they survive. So the cost to get off the planet, you can't do it, not with our technology. But what you can do is go under a mile or two or whatever the distance is. And what they say is that we have this whole system of tunnels and bases under the ground, and they're interconnecting. And one of the entrance points there is the Denver airport, which is kind of weird. If you ever been to that airport, it's not near the city. It's like in the middle of nowhere, you know, 10 miles away from the city for some reason. But people say that's one of the entrance points, and there's a number of different ones. And, you know, it even goes further. People talk about you look at our military. We spend $700 billion a year. Well, when Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense, he took a look at our budget, whatever that was, 6, 7 years ago, 5 years ago.
Yeah, I remember
the
story.
He said, I can't find $100 million a year. He goes, I trace it. It goes to this company, to that company. We bought this one. This one's out of business. He says, I can't find $100 million a year. And what people say is those are, you know, NASA is the white world that we see. Well, the Air Force is the black world, and they've got stuff that's 100 years ahead of us. And they are already down there in these underground bases, and this has gone on for years. And there's even Americans being born down there. They selected people in the military that didn't have any brothers and sisters, no siblings, parents passed away, so there's no connection. These are the people they recruited to go down there. They've already had kids. And we've got a whole breakaway society living down there of Americans who have no connection to us. And, you know, and it could be, you know, who knows, a couple of thousand, a couple of hundred, whatever. And those are the ones that are going to survive, along with, you know, people that have been designated and picked already, probably CIA, FBI, military types. You know, they're not going to pick the average person. It's going to be, I think, more of a military-structured type environment, people that survive.
Brand-new fascist kind of world.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at the way the world is and everything going on, and you almost, you know, you could see a military coup at one point just to get things back in line, but I think they already got it. I think they're already down there. They're way ahead of us. You know, you talk about like the, I think it's the NSA. In 1965, they had computers that were pretty much what we had in 1990. They were 30 years ahead of us, what we have right now. So in 2011, their computer technology is probably 2100, you know, as far as the how advanced it is.
Well, you know, guys, the thing that really blows my mind is, what you just said, I have no doubt in any part of my mind that it's true. How much surveillance is going on would probably blow the average American's mind as to how closely we are really watched, without sounding paranoid.
Yeah.
And you know what? People in this country, people would be the first ones that would be so surprised if they woke up one day and, you know, we were under martial law.
Yeah.
People would be just shocked. Oh, my goodness, what happened? When all the warning signs were there, you know, and they just decided to ignore them, you know. So, I mean, it can get crazy.
And you know what?
It can't happen here.
Yeah, and as a country, you know, I mean, all founding fathers would be rolling over in the grave right now.
Oh, yeah.
I remember after 9/11, I took a vacation down to Jamaica and the Patriot Act and all of that. It was probably 2003 when I went down there. And the Jamaican people were really mad at me. And they said, what's wrong with you Americans? How quickly you give up your rights after fighting for them for so long. And you rolled right over and gave up your rights in this Patriot Act. What's wrong? I didn't think about it. You know, I thought about it. I said, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
We're so quick to just follow. If somebody in authority comes out and says something, we all follow them, you know? And nowadays, the way people are, I'm convinced if China invaded us, 60% of the Americans would surrender as long as they had Dancing with the Stars and McDonald's. They're fine.
You betcha. You betcha. And it could have a red star right along the side of it. But don't, you know, if they can still have 2.5 men and, you know, you know, Budweiser and whatever. Yeah, I'm afraid that's the route.
I think that's a real possibility. Because, you know, you had Pearl Harbor, you had 9/11.
We're already taken over. You know, we've already lost everything, you know, and that's the way it'll happen. It'll happen so quick. People just go like, oh, and then it'll be like, well, how much can you tolerate in what's supposed to be a somewhat free society?
All right, so...
But we digress.
Yeah, let's get it back off of politics and back onto.
Let's talk about a positive scenario now, because most of what's out there is this, the destruction type stuff that's going to take place. But you know, I went to Nevada, and I spoke at the international the UFO Congress out there. Last February, and it's funny how West Coast people are so different than East Coast people. You know, East Coast, we're skeptical, we don't believe anything. That's why UFO conferences aren't that successful on the East Coast. But West Coast, they believe everything. And I couldn't believe how many New Age people were out there. And when I hit on this other scenario of 2012 that talked about it being a cyclical type evolution for us, where our consciousness changes, there's no destruction, we go into the next stage of evolution. Boy, the whole crowd just listened up, because that's what they believe.
I bet they like that.
Oh, yeah, they loved it. You know, I said to them that it's going to be the end of materialism, it's going to be the end of a male-dominated society, you know, centered on war and government. That's all going to change. It's going to be a global wake-up call in 2012.
The age of Aquarius.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it's funny, doesn't Aquarius come next? And I guess that's what the song was about. But, you know, people would all of a sudden, imagine this, close your eyes and just think about this. All of a sudden, people they're compelled to do righteous deeds. You start having dreams and visions, and the stuff starts coming true. Then while you're awake, right now, as you were talking on this radio show, you start hearing voices in your head telling you things and that come true. And then people start to see angels, okay? Then we all become connected with this telepathy where you could read each other's mind. So now, you know, there's no crime because some guy's walking down the street towards you. The woman can read his mind. He can read her mind. You know exactly where he's been, what he's intending to do. There's no crime anymore. And that's where this 2012 thing is going to go. And that's the whole other side of this, is that it's just a step up of our evolution.
Well, let's certainly hope so, that it's a step up in our evolution, an evolutionary step for mankind or for humanity. Yeah, we certainly need that, you know. It just seems to me that we do need to have some sort of unifying force. Because once people can, I mean, and you can look at it historically through time, that if people have something they can all believe in, then it's easier to get people united behind a cause.
Yeah.
Whether it's Christianity or, you know, Islam or you know, whatever, you know, that seems that once people, you know, buy into it and it works for them, that they will, you know, take it to that level.
All right, so let's talk about another side of 2012 that we haven't discussed really, and in the remaining few minutes that we have. And this is where I want to, you know, inject some of my own thinking on the matter too. And let me tell you where I'm coming from. You know, being raised as a Jehovah's Witness, I was raised with Armageddon always going to come. It's going to come. Mm-hmm. It's going to come. You know, in looking back over the millennia, one of the unique things about human nature is that there's always, always somebody proclaiming some kind of doomsday scenario. The end of the world's coming. This is going to happen. We're all going to die if we live long enough and all that other stuff. And so my approach to this whole 2012 is this. The day after 2012 is going to be the same as the day before 2012. There's no real evidence other than prophecies and, you know, and psychic predictions and different things that even suggest anything. And so the hard evidence other than scientific, yes, you know, the sun can go supernova or it can die. You know, the poles can reverse, sure. I mean, that stuff is there. You know, Yellowstone can blow up. Yep, that's all within the realms of possibility. But the big thing that I want to communicate to our audience and to our listeners is we cannot live our lives in fear. We cannot live in fear. What's going to happen is going to happen, and there's not much we really can do about it to speak of, depending on what it is. You know, an asteroid could hit the Earth. You know, we're doing what we can, and that's thankful to the technology that's increasing. We're doing what we can to try to avert these disasters, and we should do that. But for all of us who really are not in that, in a position, we can't live our lives in fear. So my admonition to everyone is to remain grounded, remain objective. Do not get caught up in that whole doomsday scenario thing. I mean, if you look back, the Second Day Adventists in the 1800s were preaching the end of the world. You know, Russell of the International Bible Students Association was predicting 1914. They became Jehovah's Witnesses. Then it was, you know, in the early 40s. Then it was 1975. Then we have the Y2K thing. Now we have 2012. There's always a doomsday prediction, always. And life goes on. And it will continue to go on until it doesn't go on, if you get meaning. So that's the biggest part about 2012 is to not buy into the fear or promoting fear or anything like that. In fact, I'm going to encourage you to do what I'm going to do on 2012, December 21st, 2012. We're going to have an end of the world party. And we're going to party like there's no tomorrow. And the only thing
like
that will
it's
probably
1999.
The only thing that will probably change is it will wake up with a hangover, perhaps. But, you know, in other words, we have nothing real. Yes, you know, a lot of things working, but life goes
on. Well,
you
know, it really makes a statement about us as a people and as a culture, you know, that we have to hang on. I mean, look. A lot of major religions have that a part of their prophecy. A lot of cultures have it in there, and it's almost like it's almost like people can't stand the mundane or what they would think are the mundane events of daily life. Maybe they've got to spice it up a little bit by saying, you know, like in your lifetime, boy, this is what's going to happen. When in reality, we've lived in some pretty interesting times, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've seen some things that I don't think any generation has ever seen, you know. So I'm grateful. But
Or we all sense it in our DNA or our collective memory that this stuff happens on a cycle. And these right now, if you're not happy with the way things are going, these are the good times right now compared to 2013, you know? So, you know, I don't know. But I did write a chapter on what the future will be like after, because I lean more towards the Mayans that it's not going to be, you know, the end of the world. They never said that it would be. That something could happen, but, you know, I don't think that, you know, we're going to wipe out 25% of the people like Revelation says. But I think in the future, when you go out 50 years, I think we're definitely going to be into biotech and nanotech and have you know, holographic entertainment, and diseases are going to be cured by nanotherapy, and there are going to be all kinds of robots, and the robot industry is going to be bigger than the auto industry.
Yeah,
and we'll have bionic. Well, think about that, bionic athletes, and then you get into what would it be like 500 years, or what are the aliens like if you start blending all of this in?
Well, let's just hope with the machines that we're always put in a position, and I think it was Arthur C. Clarke that said this, that we'll be able to pull a plug.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I've seen where machines are going to, their amount of intelligence is going to just increase so incredibly, exponentially, that they're going to be beyond us pretty soon.
All right. We're out of time. So, I mean, we've got to minute or so left. We appreciate everybody listening in. John, thanks so much for joining us tonight and sharing your...
Yeah, absolutely. Great show.
Yeah, we could do it again. I got other topics. Go to johnventry.com.
Good. I was going to tell you to mention your website, and they can get information on your book there as well, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, folks, we appreciate everybody in the chat room listening to this live broadcast. Hopefully, you've been a little more enlightened on it and some of the different things. Just remain grounded and objective, and don't use up your precious energy, you know, being motivated by fear. We appreciate the listeners in our in the Inception Radio.
Don't hide in your closet in your room.
Next week, we have Stanton Friedman back on the show again. We look to that. We encourage you and invite you to visit us at Paranexus.org, ParanexusAcademy.org. Paranexus is an association of anomalous researchers, 501c3. So please come and visit us and join us there. Grant, that's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got, too. Everybody have a great weekend coming up. And it was great having John with us tonight. Really enjoyed it.
Yep. All right, everybody. Have a great night. Great week.
Good night, everybody.